Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the New Orleans Dot Football Podcast. We are coming to you from the Better Call Botto Podcast Studio, and we are presented by Hardhide, Ponchatoula, Strawberry Whiskey. We are going to get into a ton of topics today. More on Derek Carr, what his cost is going to be, the message that his agent is putting out there. What does the Saints approach tell us about the quarterback? And with Combine Week coming up, even if they get Carr, should they still be in the market for a quarterback? We discuss all this, the need at running back, and so much more on this week's episode. Hardhide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of 3-year-old wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Ponchatoula strawberries. It is not for the thin skin. Look for it in your favorite bars, restaurants, and grocery stores. And if you need legal help with any of the following: car wrecks, offshore injuries, 18-wheeler collisions, Maritime and Jones Act, hurricane and storm claims, you better call Botto at 504-323-7777 or 985-303-7777 for your free consultation and case review. And make sure you check out our friends at Firehouse Subs on Veterans Boulevard. Great people. They do great things for the community. And if you aren't signed up for the website, neworleans.football/subscribe, hit it, get an extra podcast every week, all of our analysis, all of our stories, all of our news, all of our features, and you support us to make more shows. So it's a win-win for all of us. All right, let's get into the show. Week 4 of the Derek Carr saga rolls on.
Week 4. We're in London.
Is it week 4? I just made up a number, but I think it really might
we
be.
We should go to London for week 4. See if Derek Carr's over there.
Yeah, oh, man, it's just going on. It is so bad because I want to talk about other things, but it's lingering. And
this
it's
is,
keep
yeah, behind
lingering.
The scenes, I was like, we can't start with Carr again. People don't want to hear about it. And you're like, the feedback we've gotten is, I mean, everybody's just like us.
Yeah.
Are they getting their quarterback or not?
That's the biggest story with this team right now. It's kind of hard to move on until things move on. There have been a couple like little low-key developments. Diana Russini had the report that they're looking for $35 million. I think is people that cover the sport that can tell us one thing right off the bat. Usually that's player side pushing that narrative out there to let people know what the cost is. My reaction to that was A, it's reasonable, and B, he hasn't gotten a $35 million offer yet.
Right.
So I think we know that for sure. And then the other thing, too, and we were kind of talking about this last night a little bit, kind of the pursuit of the league, of the Saints, of everything, of how this has played out is a little bit telling about maybe who Derek Carr is. I think our line here has been that he's not going to be the savior of the team. The actions of the NFL is telling you that he's not going to be the savior of a team.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair. And I know during one of our 7 weeks of Carr coverage, I remember making the point that I really don't know where he's going to land. I mean, the fact that he's a free agent and guys like this don't get to be free agents often, it reminds me very much of when Kirk Cousins was. Obviously, we can talk about when Deshaun Watson was, really extraordinary circumstances last year available. But, you know, this is an overpay situation in general. But if you just had to, like, slot Derek Carr in compared to salaries of other quarterbacks, he's right around where there's a cutoff at $40 million, $35 million. And then the next tier is like Jameis at 12 that he got last year. There's a huge valley in between. So if he is a $25 million guy, if he's a $30 million guy, if he's a $35 million guy, if he's a $40 million guy, that all still falls outside of the top 10, but inside of the top 15. So I'm just as fascinated to see, do the Saints get him, as what has the league determined is his price. So, I mean, part of you wants to see, you know, the Saints attack it and sell you on how much they love this guy based on how aggressively they went out and got him. But you also, I mean, the dream scenario is you get him at the right price and you play it the way you're supposed to.
I think the two things that I want to see, and he's just not apparently that player, is you want to see the team attack the situation. You want to see them have to attack the situation because that tells you that, hey, like,
The whole league likes this guy.
Yeah, they're getting somebody that can win you games, that can make a difference. And this is kind of like a, well, he's cool. You know, he's cool. Yeah, like, he can get you by. But I kind of think now, like, I'm looking at it a little bit. And this probably would have been my take on it regardless, but it kind of feels like even if you do get Derek Carr, I think that you should still immediately be looking for a longer term solution. I think that your eyes should be open in every single draft. If you pay for him and the right quarterback's there at 29, like, I think that you should still have a very serious conversation about, is this the quarterback to bring in behind him? I don't think you treat him as you know, kind of the franchise icon player, whatever. Like, I think you got to be ready to kind of start looking to move on right away. He buys you time to do that. He keeps you competitive. But if your Patrick Mahomes is there and Alex Smith just won you 12 games, like, you still move on to Patrick Mahomes. And,
yeah, of course.
And, you know, I think maybe in some other situations, like if you had gotten Deshaun Watson, I think that even with how he played, like, you're kind of committed to him and you got to be a little bit more patient and you're putting more of your resources around that investment. I think your investment here is lukewarm enough that you don't really have to look at things that way.
Yeah, we'll see if it's lukewarm. I mean, and we'll see how much we find out in the end. I mean, they could be playing a good game of poker where I think we had a long text conversation about this, but I mean, it could be like when you're on eBay and you know know what your max bid is, but you're playing out the game. You'll be like, yeah, I'll increase this by $10 million if I ever have to, but if the league doesn't make me, I'm not going to. So we don't know if the Saints are going to, you know, in the introductory press conference, you know, we were going to have him no matter what it costs.
Well,
you know, we knew he was going to take his time. The one thing that I would say is I think we have learned what the league thinks about him simply because of the lack of teams that have gotten in on this. I mean, if you're Carolina, if you're Washington, if you're Tennessee, some of the teams that reportedly were showing interest, you should have acted by now. Like, if you haven't brought him in for a visit or offered him enough money to get him to come visit you, then you are being way too lukewarm. I mean, the Saints and the Jets have done what they're supposed to. If I'm any other team, I would think he could be minutes away from signing with the Saints or the Jets. And obviously we know the Jets might be waiting on Aaron Rodgers. I would be pretty surprised to see Derek Carr rush his decision because he needs to find out, you know, how aggressive the Jets are going to be or any other team that might miss out on Aaron Rodgers. And he doesn't have to. He's got this whole month to himself. But I'm very surprised that the teams that haven't gotten into the mix yet. So it's quite possible that the Saints are currently the highest bidder and prepared to keep increasing their bid and do feel the way about Derek Carr that you want. But you're right. This is playing out differently than Deshaun Watson, where teams were like, we don't care how bad it looks. We don't care how much we have to pay. This guy's our franchise. This pursuit does not feel like that. You are correct.
I think that we'll see some other teams get involved. Washington's one that I keep thinking is probably going to get in the mix at some point sooner than later. Two, I don't think I'd be shocked to hear maybe some other teams suddenly in the mix after Combine Week. You get everybody in the same area. Tim Younger's probably going to be out there, I would assume, with some draft prospects. Every team's
he's
out
be
there.
Eating great this week.
Everybody's
steak
there.
Steak lunch, steak dinner.
Everybody's there. Everybody's talking. This is kind of where things maybe sometimes pop up out of the blue. Actually, a few years ago when Drew was thinking about retiring, like, rumors started coming out from the Combine that the Saints were going to sign Tom Brady, and then Drew ended up coming back. And that's another what-if in Saints quarterback almost history that's out there. But I really think that Tom Brady was going to be the quarterback of the team if Breeze had retired. All right, so if the Carr thing goes south, they don't get him, he gets offered more money. Oh, hold on. Like, we kind of set the price, I think, the whole time. Our number was like about 35 seems reasonable. If you want to go up to like 40 to close it, okay. Where are you at now, kind of price range wise?
It took me a while. Like, the very first time that I saw a Carr report, I think I have a tweet, I don't know, like probably from early January. And I was like, oh, well, no team's going to trade for him and pay that salary. And then once we started to whittle through all the candidates and everything like that, then my price kept going up and up and up and up. But like if I went back in a time machine, I like initially would have thought 30, 33 million. Like, that's what Derek Carr felt like to me. And I've since talked myself into 40 million because I'm like, who cares? You know, you need your quarterback. If they're going for it this year, go get him. So now I guess I'm back to realizing that, you know, if there was a report that he's asking for $35 million and he hasn't gotten that offer yet, I guess I'll predict it lands at 33 or something like that. But I mean, if the question is how much would I pay him to make sure I don't lose him, I think I'd go up from there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would have offered him 30 and he would have said no, 35, and I would have been like, okay. Because, like, if you're my quarterback at $30 million, you're my quarterback at $35 million. What's that $5 million doing? It doesn't really do anything at all. So that kind of leads me to think that they're probably, like, in the 25 range, like, maybe starting out there, and then maybe somebody else gets involved and you push that number up a little bit. But it seems like it's probably pretty lukewarm. And look, to this point, like, I think you can say they played it the right way. We'll see if they get it to the finish line. But if nobody else is driving that price up, like, you have whatever offer you've made is actually truly, like, the right way to do it. It's just optically you would like them to be going after someone where it's like, no, it's like, I'm not going to let him talk to anybody else. I want to have him. He's going to be our guy.
The timetable is what makes it so weird. Like if you're looking at this objectively, there is no reason for Derek Carr to make his decision before the tampering window begins on March 13th. I mean, theoretically, no one else is allowed to talk to anyone else before March 13th. Certainly no one's allowed to agree to a deal before then. So for him to sign on,
I disagree on that, because, like, what if Daniel Jones hits and now all of a sudden, like, I'm okay with either or? You can get your deal now.
But I think it's the opposite. I think if you are Derek Carr's representation, the price can only go up. If Daniel Jones signs a $45 million deal with the Giants, like he's reportedly asking for, all of a sudden you can be like, well, you got to pay us more. If
he ain't getting 45.
If Aaron Rodgers goes to the Raiders, a team that isn't even looking for Derek Carr, your price goes up. Like, I think there are only things that can drive the price up. So the only way the Saints get it done now instead of, March, is by making an exorbitant offer that he can't refuse. And smart business is not to do that, but you don't want to lose the guy. So, I mean, it's a tough game.
See, I think that if someone goes out and signs someone, like if the Saints and the Jets are out here competing and then Daniel Jones becomes a free agent in the tampering window and you can get him, and these are the only two teams that want Derek Carr and one of them gets Daniel Jones, now you have no leverage at all. Like, so I think that he can get his best offer right now. And just like I thought before, like if he accepted a trade, he could use that $38 million like his leverage to get his price up. And it seems like once he cut that out, he got his legs cut out, but only one team was willing to trade for him, so he didn't really have that option to use that as leverage.
Yeah.
I think his leverage is going to drop more and more and more as more teams get out there, because, okay, shoot, we don't want to pay you $35 million. We can get Jimmy G for 28, and we can get Daniel Jones for 31. Daniel Jones ain't getting no $45 million, man. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can see a situation where he loses his suitors.
If I'm him and his agent, we don't know every conversation that's taken place, but you kind of feel like you have the Saints option. You could say yes to the Saints, and that one you're not as scared is going to go away. I don't think the Saints are going to trade for Aaron Rodgers. It's possible that Jimmy G enters the Saints picture, but clearly they've been aggressive enough that I think you want some of these other teams. I think you want the Jets to increase their offer. I think you want Washington and Carolina to get in the mix, whatever has kept them out of the mix so far. But I bet they could say yes to the Saints right now. I would think the Saints have the highest offer on the table right now.
I think it's dangerous for them the way they're playing. Like, this is the tampering window this week. This is the tampering window. Like, people know who they're signing coming out of this week. If I was, like, Mickey, I would just go have a meeting, like, right, find out where Younger's hotel is and have a meeting with Donnie right in the lobby. Like, let him just see me sitting there talking to somebody else. Like, those are just...
Meaning Garoppolo's agent,
yeah,
which is
like,
funny.
I just think that... Ugh.
Yeah.
They're playing it, a little bit tough. Like,
maybe. I mean, but we also don't know. Have they already increased their offer three times? And Carr just doesn't want to say yes yet. I don't think they have either. But, yeah. I mean, like I said, if they're the highest bidder, it becomes hard to tell them to go and outbid themselves.
Oh, yeah, they can't. They can't. Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a number that would make him say yes today.
The only point I was making at the beginning is you would just like it to be a quarterback where they're like, nah, man, we can't risk anything. We can't let him leave the building.
There are blank check quarterbacks in the NFL.
He's not one. And we found that out. And we knew that. I mean, we already knew that already. Yeah. So if they don't get him, they're going to the combine this week. Is there anybody here that absolutely intrigues you? Chicago's talking about trading the number one pick. Do you try to put together your next 47 first-round picks?
Sure, yeah. Sure, I make that. Yeah. Sure, I have the internal discussion, and I hope they have, about how much would we pay for that number one pick, and I tell Chicago, hey, we need a quarterback, we're interested. But Chicago is talking to Houston at number two, and Indy at number four, and Vegas at number seven, and Carolina at number nine, and Seattle at number five. They're probably...
Yeah,
the Saints called? All right, if we get desperate, we'll talk to the Saints. Like, why would you trade the number one pick for the number 29 pick? You just, I mean, you can't do it. You can't do it. But, you know, do they consider trading up for Will Levis if he falls, C.J. Stroud if he falls, Anthony Richardson if he falls? Should they be looking at Hendon Hooker? I think all these names should be plan B behind Derek Carr. I mean, we've talked, I've looked at that list of free agents and I've turned it sideways and I've turned it upside down and I've squinted through it and I'm like, I want to convince myself on another free agent or possible trade candidate, but I'm not into Baker Mayfield. I'm not into Jimmy Garoppolo at the price I think he's going to cost. Tannehill, maybe, if he was cheap.
Boy.
You know, I don't want Carson Wentz. I don't want Sam Darnold and Gardner Minshew anymore after I tried to talk myself into those guys. I don't want Cooper Rush. I mean, like, we've seen them play with the B and C options. So for me, it's Carr or draft. And they're not in a great draft position because I have not seen a single mock draft yet that puts Hendon Hooker anywhere near 29 or 40. And hey, that'd be great if they could get him at 71, but I'm seeing no one projected to go 29 or 40. That would be my number one choice if I could convince myself that they believe a quarterback is worth 29 or 40. That's what I want for this team.
Yeah, I think they probably look at Hooker as like a third round pick. And, you know, third round picks get picked in the second. Like that's kind of how it works. There's 12 or 15 first rounders usually every year. And then the guy you're drafting at the end of the first round is usually a second rounder. So maybe he gets pushed up into the second round. You know, I think a lot of mock drafts react to the information that we kind of hear too, and they're hearing Hendon Hooker is a third rounder, so that's where they slot him. But in reality, if everybody sees him as a third rounder, somebody's going to jump that line and probably take him in the
and
second.
I'd love to see I'd love to see the Saints do it, but I don't want them to do it based on, well, we're just going to take the highest ranked quarterback. If they don't believe in him, I don't want them to take him at 40, but as we've talked about, this is something you believe in. The scouting is so wrong on quarterback. I'm putting, you know, I don't want to take your point away from you that maybe that's a position where you should do things that you don't believe in doing because you need to take cracks at it.
Yeah, well, I just think the things that teams believe in doing are wrong so often that the things they aren't doing could eventually end up being right. I think that it's just kind of my thought process on drafting quarterbacks is just you widen the net. Like if you're just narrowing it down to like, well, we only like Jimmy or Garrett Grayson is the only guy we've liked. Well, maybe draft someone that you're just kind of okay on, that you see some decent traits, that maybe everything you've heard isn't perfect, but the value's kind of there. But for this reason or that reason, you normally would veer away from them. Like, take a shot because you don't have anything. I just think that the inexact process of scouting and character scouting and, you know, just everything they put into this, like it just doesn't lead to the results that work for the NFL. So if you don't like Hendon Hooker necessarily, you aren't in love with him, he isn't someone that you're like, well, this is absolutely going to work, like you felt with Grayson, and you are drafting at 70, 71, whatever it is, and he's still there, and it ranks with your grade. Like, I think you should just be like, well, all right, we'll try it out and see what happens.
If they don't take Hendon Hooker at 71, then I'm going to storm the facility. But the question I think is, would you consider him at 40? And then the question becomes, if you'd consider him at 40, should you consider him at 29? Because then you get the fifth-year option. And all of a sudden, I've moved the guy up 30 spots. But, I mean, that's where this team is at quarterback. And a rookie quarterback would solve so many problems because it would solve their quarterback problems and it would solve their cap issues. There's nothing this team needs more than a good quarterback. Number two on the list is a cheap quarterback,
so
that would be great. Yeah,
if he works.
So like try to find that guy, but, you know, am I trying to force something that isn't there?
If we were covering the Steelers, like, I would probably be having the conversation right now, like, should they be trying to replace Kenny Pickett? Yeah. You know, like, so it doesn't necessarily solve all your problems, but if it hits, that is obviously the absolute best way to do it. And if you could tell me that they can trade up to get C.J. Stroud or somebody else, that's the path I'm pushing everything.
We're bringing Brandon into this conversation because the most realistic, can you trade up for this guy? I mean, we're not
going to. CBS had him number one. They had Richardson going number one in a recent mock. And I asked a scout about it, and he was like, well, it's not that crazy. It's like, man, are you kidding me? Like, I think that's insane. But
Anthony Richardson reminds me of a couple of guys that
they had the Colts going up to get him. So it made sense.
We've seen this before where a guy is. It's all traits and no production. I mean, we've seen that with Josh Allen, which is what everyone is saying is a positive comparison, but we've seen it with Jordan Love, which, you know, to this point, we haven't really seen Jordan Love in the NFL yet. I don't know exactly where Anthony Richardson fits into that mix, but what I was going to say real quick is Hendon Hooker feels like the guy we talk about most for the Saints because of where they are. We're not going to get a ton of new Hendon Hooker buzz at the combine this week and pro days because of his injury. But whatever Anthony Richardson does at the combine this week and whatever he does at his pro day could be like the number one story of draft season. So we are going to start talking about this guy one way or
another. If he's accurate, like the whole conversation around him changes. And I think he's smart to go out there and compete. Like, I think he's someone that needs to go out there and compete and show people. And yeah, if he's hitting his targets this week, like I think people start going crazy for him.
There's so many teams that need quarterbacks in the top 10 and so many teams that could trade up. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't get drafted in the top 10 because it just takes one team to fall in love with him. I want to ask Brandon because I already know his answer. What's your I know you haven't like broke down everything that you would normally do, but what's your initial is that a chance you take? If you're the Saints, do you trade next year's first and 29 to move up for Anthony Richardson?
Ooh, I'd have to take a harder look at this to kind of have that strong of an opinion on it. But like I think that he does a lot of things well. The few times that I watched him, I thought he was pretty exciting. There were a few times I saw him this year that I thought he was pretty bad. You know, I think that he missed a lot of passes, didn't win a lot of games. If I'm trading up for someone and he had like, what was it, like 6 wins last year, that's a little bit alarming to me. Look, there's more to that than just quarterback play, but I don't know that he necessarily elevated his team. But I think he has a chance of being really good. And you mentioned Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen makes it so hard to talk about anyone because, like, that's kind of the and it's a recency bias thing, but you see someone with traits and you're just like, well, you can put it together. Like, even Jalen Hurts, he had traits, you put it together, and he becomes really good. And I think that there's ways that you can maybe hide some of the accuracy stuff. I think you can run maybe like a simplified version of your offense like they did at the beginning of last year. Not last year, but the year before when they got off to the good start with Jameis, which is kind of more stuff down the field and kind of keeping him out of trouble in the middle of the field. So, I mean, there's ways that I think you can make this guy work. It's just, you know, I think where he goes, and I think the same thing for Levis. It's, you could tell me either one of these guys hit and become great or they bust. And I think a lot of it's going to be environment, the place they're at, how they develop, the coaching they get. I think a lot of that's going to determine their future.
Well, the thing I like about Hurts and Justin Fields, and you could almost throw Taysom Hill into this conversation, even more than the Josh Allen path to success is, I think the league has gotten better at, you can still use what this guy does well until he becomes the complete package. Like, Jalen Hurts was so successful when they revamped their offense to just amplify his strengths and gave him time to develop as a passer. And we're seeing Chicago try to do that right now with Justin Fields. The running hit this year, and it kind of bought, you know, he gets now his third year as a starter, you know, like they're giving him time by amplifying what he can do. So it would certainly electrify the offense. All right, sell us on Anthony Richardson, Brandon.
That's the guy. That's the guy. I'm telling you, bro. Because last year, think about it. People were like, oh, Jameson Williams or Chris Olave. Because Jameson Williams was hurt compared to what Hendon Hooker is right now. And we went with Chris Olave, and that's the greatest thing that we could have done. You know, and with Anthony Richardson, I mean, I saw at Manning Camp spinning the ball 60 yards off of one knee. You know what I mean? He can. We got flyers. We got between Chris and Rashid Shaheed, we got flyers that can go down the field. And you could say, oh, accuracy is a problem. He had a first-year head coach in Billy Napier in the SEC level. You know what I mean? He went from ULL.
See, NFL level.
NFL level, he going to be a dog. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
What ranks higher, the SEC or the NFC South?
Nah, definitely. I feel like, you know, he's going to take a little bit of development. Everybody is. But, I mean, he's not, no offense, Cardale Jones or JT Barrett. You know what I mean? He's a guy. He's a guy. I could stand on that on all 10 toes. He's a guy.
Yeah, and I don't look. I mean, he might not hit. If you're asking me to you know, go to MGM and make a bet on whether he's going to hit or not, I'm not convinced. But I don't mind if the Saints take a shot on a guy who might fail. Like, that's the reality of this team right now. Like,
with the trade, though,
you can't miss with two first rounders that often, but you can with a guy who gets described as Cam Newton and Josh Allen every once in a while. You can try, you know, you can't miss that often, but you're allowed to try. If there's belief in, you know, we can't just defer to the Saints, obviously.
With the trade though, that's the thing with the trade up in the mess.
It's tough. Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It would cost.
Swing and miss is a little bit easier than trade up in the mess.
I know it's tough, but I mean, that's where they are. Like I would be fascinated to go to every training camp practice and every game and and I'm sure we would see highs and lows along with it. But this is a team now that, if you want to list teams that should take that big swing for a quarterback, they've got to be. Look, every team that doesn't have a quarterback should take a big swing for a quarterback. But the Saints are certainly one that, you know, they've got a lot of good pieces in place at other positions, and they need to fill that spot. And their salary cap is to them. I mean, they need a rookie quarterback. So if there is any belief, that's where you should take your swing. I don't know. I mean, but I'm certainly not sold yet. Obviously, I have no idea. And the other thing, the only thing that worries me is I don't agree with it. You know, I'm sure some fans would be, I don't trust this coaching staff to be the one that's going to get the most out of them because we haven't seen them succeed on offense. I don't know if I trust their patience because
that's a good point.
Because they gave up on Jameis Winston so quickly and wanted Andy Dalton. They didn't want volatility at that position. They wanted what they knew they were going to get out of that position. So that doesn't feel like a coaching staff that's willing to ride the highs and lows of a young quarterback.
I'm reluctant to say this. I was looking yesterday just because I wanted to see the differences. Everybody in the room, would you guys believe me if I told you that the Saints averaged more yards per game this year than last year?
No. This year than last year?
They scored a little bit less,
because even when they were winning last year, it was when Jameis was throwing for like 150 yards.
The wild thing is if you wanted to construct an argument that they were a better offense this year than last year, you could do it. It is crazy to me. It's crazy to me that exists.
I lumped those 2 years together. I mean, though one had Sean Payton and one didn't, my complaints about the Saints offense aren't that Pete Carmichael can't do it without Sean Payton. It's that it's lost its way over the last number of years.
So, look, you're leading me to my point here. Like, I think that I was just looking at it and I started thinking about it a little bit. And it led me to the thought that, like, you need the quarterback to make this offense go. Like, yeah. I don't think this is an offense that makes a quarterback go. A quarterback that to make it go. So, I don't know. I found that interesting. And look, if they don't have the right guy, like, I don't think it would matter. Like, even with Sean, without the right quarterback. And look, they got by it a few times with Teddy in there. Taysom in there, winning games with Drew out. They kind of had elite players around. The offensive line was absolutely elite. Alvin Kamara was at his absolute peak. Mike Thomas was the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, when Teddy went 5-0 as a starter, it was Mike Thomas's 149 catch season.
And if you really break that film down, like, there was a lot of things not happening that should have been happening. And you know, they got away with a lot of stuff. I just kind of found that fascinating that, like, once Drew went, the offense kind of really did deteriorate really quickly. And look, Jameis did really good in the very limited amount of plays they allowed him to make. But outside of that, like, it wasn't a good offense in terms of, you know, overall production and just kind of yards and points and all that stuff. They were playing 20-point games 2 years in a row. So they do need a quarterback.
Almost 3 years in a row. Drew's last year.
I think they averaged like 30 points
Drew's
a game
last year, it was... This guy can't throw the ball more than 5 yards down the field. I mean, this offense
was so good they were still scoring.
I know, I know. People regret saying that now, but this offense has been old and tired, and let's try to put a 13-play drive together for several years, not just the D.A. Pete Carmichael year.
Anthony Richardson is not going to do that. So here's a big question. If they say they land Carr in, I don't know, someone other than Howie Roseman calls up and says, hey, like, trade up to come get this guy. You know, we'll deal our pick. It's this year's first round pick and next year's first round pick. And you got Carr on the roster.
No, on that one, because I don't make both investments. Like, I think both those options are on the table. Pay a lot for Carr, and $30 million is a lot. It'd be the most they've ever paid a quarterback in franchise history. Drew never made more than 25, I don't think, or 27 or whatever. Obviously, prices have gone up since then, but 30 is not nothing. So I am not paying that much for Carr. And 2 first-round picks for Richardson. I'm telling them to choose one or the other. I hear what you're saying. Carr doesn't mean I don't draft Hendon Hooker in the second or third round, but I don't make, because the only reason I pay Carr that much money is if I believe he's more than a 1 year. You know what I mean? Like, I want Carr to be my starter for 5 years if I'm paying him that much money, at least 5.
Brennan,
I agree with Mike. I can't do both. You know what I mean? I can't do both. You already know who Derek Carr is. You know what he does. But with Hooker, you know, I don't even know if I'm paying. What you said, 2 first?
Yeah. Richardson.
For Richardson.
Richardson. Yeah. I'll pay 1 first.
You pay one, yeah. But yeah, if someone called and said, hey, trade up top 10, you already got Carr in the bag, are you doing it?
No way.
It's interesting, though, because like I don't think I'd do it either. But it is interesting because I think that's the absolute – that would be the best scenario for a player like Anthony Richardson because you would have Derek Carr, and if it takes Richardson two years to get ready and then year three, he's your starter. Like, I think that's the situation he probably goes into and emerges at his absolute best doing it. I might do it. I might consider it if that was actually there, an option on the table. Like, and the problem is like you got to solve the problem first, and then if the opportunity exists later, I would strongly have to weigh that option. Just like looking at the long-term health of my team, I don't think I'd ultimately pull the trigger, but I would be extremely tempted to kind of set it up and be like, "All right."
It is funny though when you look like this probably hardly ever happens for a team, but if the Saints are right now, like. Our number one choice is Gidhen and Hooker at 71. Our number two choice is Richardson falls into the 20s, but we just can't count on either of those happening, so let's get Carr. And then the draft comes, and like Richardson's there at 22, and you're like, well, I guess let's do option A and option B, you know?
Yeah, see like a 22 is probably your first
and second.
Then
you're not paying two first.
Then I think you do kind of maybe jump on that and take advantage of that opportunity. And then, man, Derek Carr would be so sad if that happened because he's trying to go somewhere where that doesn't work out, but... It's just kind of where they're going to be at if they're dealing with these types of quarterbacks. You can't say really no to anything. But, yeah, two first-round picks to go up to get Anthony Richardson, who's definitely not a sure thing at this point. Like, I wouldn't do it. If you felt about him like you felt about Mahomes then, and he's there, and you can actually go up, then that's when you make that type of thing. Yeah, you have that ultimate belief. But, yeah, I don't think anyone has that belief, you know, necessarily in Richardson.
And it'll be fascinating to see. I mean, it's funny, Brandon was making the strongest argument for Richardson, but then he threw in the names like Cardale Jones and JT Barrett, and obviously nobody was considering those guys as first rounders, but it's like when you try to sell yourself on someone, your comps are always like the best. He could be Josh Allen, he could be he could be Cam Newton, and then when you list people that it could also be, and obviously, do you think Zach Wilson has become the new, or is it still Mitch Trubisky? Like, who's the new, this is what happens with number two overall picks sometimes? Did Zach Wilson take it away from Mitch Trubisky?
I say Zach Wilson a lot on this podcast. He's one that goes that gets said a lot. I say Sam Darnold a lot on here.
Jets and Jets.
Mariota was a guy that kind of got pointed out for a while as like a sort of okay, but not a solution type. Yeah, Trubisky was one. Trubisky got to the playoffs once. I don't know. He had a decent little when he went to the Steelers. Like people thought it was like a sneaky good signing because he had a great preseason that year. I don't know if you remember.
He rehabbed
that
for a year in Buffalo too as their backup. Yeah, and yeah, everybody.
Yeah, you get that Buffalo on you.
And Buffalo bump, man.
Yeah, well, it was like Teddy got that bump from the Saints too. So it just kind of happens sometimes. Played though too and won five games. But yeah, I think he has. I think Zach Wilson's kind of the poster boy for like okay. Like this is what can go wrong. But look, I don't think it's like his talent. I think it's kind of like maybe his approach and, you know, kind of some of the stuff you hear coming out of the Jets is that people don't like him. Like I think people kind of they don't need to love you, but they got to like not celebrate when you get benched. Like if they're celebrating when you get benched, like there's something bad going on around you.
All right. Combine. I think I also mentioned to you like to me, we're looking at these quarterbacks at the combine and Tyjae Spears like. Speaking of that number 71 pick, have you seen any local produce a mock draft on social media or in the media or anyone that you know that didn't just like write Tyjae Spears in ink at number 71 to the Saints yet? It's what the entire city wants.
If he's there at 71, that kind of almost feels like a steal to me. Like, he was so good, people at the Senior Bowl was like everybody's watching, like, man, who's that? Like just, you know, passively he would just catch your eye and make you kind of take notice. I do think they need to enter this draft with the idea of like, we're replacing Alvin Kamara. Like we're replacing him. Like we're trying to get the guy that eventually replaces him right now.
Eventually.
Alvin's going to be
not right starting week one this season.
But I think you approach this offseason as if you don't have a running back because he's going to get suspended. Like the video stuff came out. Yeah. I would be shocked if he doesn't get suspended for a decent amount of time. Like it just kind of seems like it's heading that way. He's at a certain age. I think he can still be really productive. He still was productive last year. He averaged 4 yards.
Well, we don't have to say age either. It's his seventh NFL season coming up. I mean, that's mileage.
But just practically speaking, Alvin, where he's at in his career, just the fact that he's not going to be available. Like, I think you go into this offseason, you say, okay, like, we need a running back. We do not have a running back on our roster. You get that guy. You make that investment. I don't think you take a half measure here. And then when Alvin comes back, maybe you have this, like, really incredible 1-2 punch for the next year or two. And that's kind of where you go from it. And that's how you kind of just start to transition now while Alvin is still at a point before he starts going on a decline.
It's the most obvious. My only disagreement is I don't approach my offseason as if I don't have a running back on the roster, because I'm not really in on Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, Saquon Barkley.
I'm not signing an exclusive free agent.
Tony Pollard. And then there's the next tier. There's the Kareem Hunt. There's the Alexander Mattison, who I'm intrigued by because he's got like no mileage on him from Minnesota. And the one thing I do like about free agency is it's the most obvious thing in the world, or so we think, that go draft your running back. That I feel like if there's a lot of free agent running backs in one class, values will shake out. So if you can sign an Alexander Mattison for, like one of those, 4 years, $16 million, I have no idea exactly what he would cost or something, then maybe that's the great value and the great idea. But other than that, the draft seems like the obvious path for getting a running back, because you need one so bad. Even if Alvin Kamara is on your roster, you need that second run, even if you weren't worried about replacing Alvin Kamara long term, you need a second running back so bad, but you also need a future number one. It's such an obvious need. It's right behind quarterback is the most obvious need on this team right now. I don't think that means you pay as much as you would for defensive linemen or something like that. But drafting one in round two or round three, or even frankly, even round one should be.
Let's talk about that, because I think it's normally kind of crazy to draft a running back in the first round,
because they have the 29th pick.
But also, even if it was higher, kind of where they're at quarterback, like, the investment in running back is maybe a way to offset that a little bit. And maybe you push that up, and maybe that hides a couple of the issues you have on your offensive line. Like, you can't address everything on the offense this year. Like, you can't have sure things across the board on the line. It's not going to happen. And even your left tackle, like, he had 2 foot injuries. Like, that's tough to even bank on right now. So if the dude from Texas is sitting there at 29, in a typical year, I'd be like, no, like, I'm not taking a running back that high.
It's Bijan Robinson, and he looks like he's going to be special. He probably won't be there anywhere near 29. But
I think there's multiple ways to build your team and kind of overpower some of the weaknesses by getting better at one position. That is a spot where I think you could justify it right now, given their circumstance. If Derek Carr is your quarterback, you have shakiness on the line. That's a good way to offset some of that stuff.
Well, and to go back to the conversation we were having about what this offense is like, it's not an offense that seems ready to be built around Anthony Richardson. It's definitely ready to be built like the 2017 Saints when Kamara and Mark Ingram both gained 1,500 yards from scrimmage. I mean, that is what this team wants to be. It's what it wanted to be in Dennis Allen's first year, but even Sean Payton's last 2 years. They want to win time of possession and, put together long drives and win with their run game and win with, this is what they're trying to be, and they just didn't have the horses for it.
Yeah, I think they should try to be something else.
No, I agree, but
that's what they're going
to
do.
But the worst thing is to try to be this offense without having the offensive linemen or the running backs to pull it off.
Yeah, what they're going to do versus what they should do are two different
things. It would also be nice to see them stop using Alvin as the between the tackles runner as much as they have in recent years, and let somebody else do that more and get more creative with
that. The wild thing with Alvin is that his, like, inside the tackles runs last year were actually decent, and it was the outside zones that kind of got bad a little bit. So, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I think they gotta cure. Yeah. Getting more dynamic at that position, though, and then you drop Alvin back in, like, that's an identity, and then you get your two burners down the field. You could at least then, if they would actually do it, be a play-action team. Like, you would have the pieces then to be that type of offense, which I thought that's what they wanted to be, and then they didn't use play-action. So, I don't know. We're going to figure out what they want to be. We'll be at the Combine all week covering everything. We're supposed to hear from Mickey Loomis, Dennis Allen at some point this week. We'll have everything on the prospects, what we're hearing. A lot of rumors you usually find this time of year. So if you aren't on NewOrleans.football yet, sign up. $9 a month. It's investment. Get an extra podcast every week. And for all you guys that are already there, we appreciate you. Talk to you soon.